Do you know what, Alex? I'm just one stomach flu away from my ideal weight.
You'll get there. So in this episode, much like that quote alluded to, we're talking about Emily Blunt and her new film, The Fall Guy. And I am Alex from Los Angeles.
And I'm Karen from Los Angeles as well. Welcome to Movies That Shaped Us. We're two longtime friends who grew up on opposite ends of the globe with very different backgrounds, but we're both shaped and are still being shaped by the movies we see and love. In each episode, we cover a filmmaker who shaped our love of movies, and join us as we explore why they matter to us before reviewing the three movies in the filmography that made the biggest impact on us.
Yeah, so Emily Blunt. So this is an actress who's been around a couple decades now. It's interesting. This episode is similar, I think, to the one we did the two episodes ago on Kirsten Dunst, where I've always liked the actress and I've followed her career for a while, but I never really kind of took the step back to think about her career in any like wider form until preparing for this episode, which is actually very interesting and fun for me to do because I have enjoyed a lot of Blunt's performances. And it was interesting thinking about and going back and seeing the different types of roles she was in, and that she really, yes, she started out in romantic comedies. We'll talk about, you know, her big movies when we get to our episodes, but she really branched out pretty quickly into other genres. And I actually find she's very successful in those too. Like, she isn't someone who can be so pigeonholed in a particular genre. She has a lot of range, which as a movie star sometimes can be pretty rare. Like, usually you have a star persona that you're working against and the movie's built around you and things like that. But I think she can extend herself and what she's good at and what her persona is into a lot of different genres, which I find very interesting and cool and unique, actually, in modern times. What are your high level thoughts on Emily?
Yeah, I would agree. I know this for sure, that if I'm going to watch Emily Blunt in any movie, I know she's going to be good in it, you know, and there are very few people I can say that about. Like, she has that sort of commitment and she always shows up. I totally agree. She actually has a lot of range, and that sort of is another testament to the fact that she's always good, you know, and she tries different things. Sometimes the movies don't work out, but she's usually good. It is interesting, though, because I have actually thought about her career before quite a bit, because I've sort of been like, why has, even though she's good, she's been in lots of good movies, but she hasn't really hit that big, you know, as one would expect. Like, and this is my hot take, which is her introduction to the world was in a supporting part. And I think she sort of stayed in that second gear. She's been in a lot of ensemble movies. She's been in movies that are high concept, or she's been like a supporting character to another lead, including The Fall Guy that we're going to talk about today. And there's something about that she sort of stayed there. And she and her team, I think they've tried to do different things with her, with like, okay, let's put her in franchise movies or these big budget movies and see if something happens. But the point is that those movies are never around her. She's just like a small part, small to medium part of those movies. So it's a bit curious to me, you know, that why has this not really happened? I can't name a movie that she's actually the lead of, you know, in a major way. So it's interesting because she's talented, she's versatile, she's beautiful, can extend herself across different genres. I don't know why this hasn't happened, you know? It's a bit sad.
Yeah, I wonder if it's by choice and trying to manage her career slowly. I mean, I guess it's been, you know, a while since she broke through, like practically almost 20 years. But maybe that's by design, though. It could also, yeah, like, I'm trying to think too, if she's had like a crack at that. Like, did they test her out in that lead role where the movie is literally hanging on her star power only, and it kind of underperforming or not doing well? And I can't think of something. So
there is one.
There is one. Okay.
Which Girl on the Train was, I think, that movie.
Oh, right. Yeah. The Girl on the Train.
Again, she's very good in it. From what I've heard, I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah, so I haven't either.
Speak to it myself, but like, it ended up being the sort of cheesy kind of, you know, novel adaptation of sorts, and it didn't really go anywhere, but she's good in it. But again, that's always the theme. She's good in it, but the movie or the director or the people that she's worked with or the material itself just doesn't amount to something more. And that sort of was, I think, the one try, which is kind of, again, sad. I think she should get more tries. I hope somebody would cast her in like a major role, I think. And it's interesting also to the, because in my mind, she and Anne Hathaway will always be tied together because of Prada.
Oh.
And it's interesting to just look at their careers, right? But Anne Hathaway being the lead of Prada instantly kind of was perceived as a lead. And of course, you know, we went through a phase of Hatha haters, but then she sort of found her way back and has been doing more interesting things. But she's always the lead. Like, she's perceived as a lead, not Emily Blunt.
Right. Like, she started out, Princess Diaries was probably her first movie and was already the lead, the, you know, the title character, and Blunt coming from supporting. I mean, she just was supporting Oscar nominated too.
Yeah.
That was her first time she kind of cracked through for the critics too. So yeah, maybe she's just forever the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of situation.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, with the right material, and we'll talk about it when we get into some of the films too, I think there is a version of her persona and her on-screen presence that could really work.
Oh, for sure.
As a lead, I don't think The Girl on the Train, which again, I've not seen, but I imagine it's a, you know, sort of a pulp, you know, airport novel type of story.
That's what it is.
That, that I don't think she wouldn't put her best foot forward there. It's not putting what I think her persona would be, would work in a movie like that. But again, I haven't seen it. So
no, she's great in it, I'm sure. It's just that the movie, that kind of movie can only reach so far, you know? So that's the issue.
Okay, so her latest film is The Fall Guy from this year. The IMDb plot summary: a down-and-out stuntman must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. This movie's written and co-directed by David Leitch, starring Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt and Aaron Taylor-Johnson. So do you want to start off on your take on this film? What did you think of The Fall Guy? Did you fall for it? Let's be blunt about it. Did you fall for it? Got the puns coming fast and furious today.
No, I did not fall for this movie. It's very sad to me, you know. I watched this movie recently, so it's like still very fresh in my head, and I was thinking about, why does this movie not work? Because it has a lot of good ingredients, you know, charming stars, an interesting premise for the most part, you know, great stunts, all of that. And I think there are many layers to it, which is, number one, making a summer blockbuster, which is supposed to be entertaining and fun, but also has some heart to it, is very difficult, I think. And it's funny, I watched this movie and I came home and my boyfriend and his brother at home, they were watching Tropic Thunder.
Oh,
which is,
oh my gosh, like this similar type of movie.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, and I came in very, they were like almost done with the movie and I was instantly hooked to finish Tropic Thunder as to what happens. And I think it's a zany premise, obviously, but everybody in the cast has to really commit to the zaniness of this, of what we are trying to do here. And I think The Fall Guy just has way too many elements and none of them are really, really fleshed out. You know, there's romance that's not fleshed out. There's character development that's not really fleshed out. You don't know why you should care about these people other than their star power charisma, you know? And you can't really hang everything on that. Maybe you could 10, 20 years ago, I don't know, but not anymore. But even then, I mean, if you think about the blockbusters that we grew up with in the 90s, yes, they had a big star draw to them, but the movies were really fun. Like, the jokes were amazing. The romance made sense. You even shed a tear at the end when, you know, the guy and the girl got together or what have you. Here, because of low character development, a zany premise that doesn't really make sense, and then the jokes don't land. The stunts are very good, but I guess what I'm saying is that the movie doesn't know what it wants to be. And it takes a lot of finesse from a screenwriting and direction standpoint to make a four quadrant, you know, multi-genre movie that's a blockbuster. And I don't think David Leitch has that. It's very difficult to do, you know? So now, was I bored? Not really. Did I have an okay time sitting there? Yeah, it was fine, you know? So that's sort of my number one sort of point about this movie as to why it doesn't really work. Like, I'm not going to remember this movie at all. I forgot about it the moment I walked out of the theater.
Hopefully not too much. We have to talk about it. But yes, I know.
I know.
I know what you mean. I had a similar feeling on this. I didn't think this movie was very good at all. And really, to me, it was a lot like similar things you mentioned, but like the story, the script just was not working. Like I'm surprised that this got passed out of development, honestly. Like this, there wasn't
it's
enough
like
here.
So botched.
The twist wasn't really that interesting. I was not gripped at all in this. I didn't care about what was going on. And in terms of the star power thing too, like I do believe a very weak script can still be okay if the star can save something like this. And while I thought Emily Blunt actually did a very good job in this movie, I'm not a big fan of Ryan Gosling, and I don't think he has enough of that star power to overcome the lack of story or plot in this movie. Another actor with more of charisma and star power could have saved this movie and made it more interesting, but Gosling just isn't it. And, you know, not to dovetail too much into a Ryan Gosling discussion, but I think actually he works better as a supporting character. Like we were just mentioning with Blunt, I don't think he can carry a movie, at least in my opinion. He doesn't really have that. And I think he showed it in this. And, you know, their chemistry was okay, but I think she was actually carrying more of it. I thought she did a better job in the movie than him. And I actually was just kind of bored through most of it. Sort of also surprised because, you know, Leech came from stunts and that his entire company is stunts, right? And I was expecting the stunts to, I don't know, like be more impressive and look more real. And they actually, like, I had to remind myself, there's this one whole sequence where it's a pretty, you know, well put together sequence where Ryan Gosling's character is in like a big trash compactor thing getting dragged through the streets where he's fighting a guy. And I'm like, I think this is probably practically filmed, but I couldn't really tell. It didn't look real. Like it looked like it could have been, you know, a bunch of CGI and visual effects, but it wasn't. And it didn't even show it in the post-credit sequence. No, he was actually in the thing getting dragged through. It just didn't look real though to me for some reason. Did you get that sense too? Like the stunts, like they didn't wow me. It didn't feel like a love letter to the stunt community until the post-credit sequence it did. But I didn't feel that love and appreciation for the stunt artists and the stunt community as much as I think David Leitch wanted. And what were your thoughts on that?
I'm totally with you. I think there's something about just the color palette of the movie. I think that it looks very video gamey and that sort of takes away from it. So yeah, you're supposed to really be in awe of these stunts, but you're not really. The other thing also is that we've seen so much of this stuff right through movies over decades and decades now, Mission Impossible series, what have you, that I think it's going to take a lot more also to wow us. There's some of that too, but yeah, it's mostly just the way the whole thing is rendered. It just doesn't look real, you know? And then on your Gosling point, this is going to be my number two thing. I couldn't agree more. I think this is what I was saying with the Tropic Thunder thing. Like, you need a star with a lot of charisma and almost sort of match and elevate the energy of the movie. Gosling, in my mind, has always been like a low energy actor, you know, which is not a bad thing.
No, it's different.
Like, his sense of humor is sort of very self-aware, tongue-in-cheek. He's not a loud actor. And I think you need something louder. Kind of what Blunt was bringing, I think, to the movie. Like, she's very committed.
And yes.
She always is. Like, she shows up. She knows what kind of movie this ought to be. And she's doing that. The problem is she's barely in the movie. She's a supporting part, you know? And even her arc is weird. Like, how do you go from camera operator to a director?
That was
and
weird.
It's just, you know, just a lot of things just don't make sense. But whatever there is, like, she's bringing it. From a chemistry standpoint, it's more of Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt having fun and this chemistry there. But Holt and Jody, whatever their names are, they to me feel like almost siblings in the movie. You know, there's not. And this is because of lack of character development in my mind.
Yeah.
You don't know who these people were. You see a few glances in the first 10 minutes, spoiler alert, before there's an accident. But we don't know why these people care for each other at all. So then how are you supposed to buy anything that happens afterwards? You know, that, or you make a different movie that, oh, they don't really know each other. There's just like a little bit of a, you know, attraction, sexual tension, whatever in the beginning. But then when he comes back, that's when the romance really starts, you know?
Right.
So again, story holes, because I'm fine with the twist not working. Just make it a great rom-com, you know?
It can still be
or
fun.
Just make it a great action movie. Like, it's like a C- across all of those items. And then when you, you know, add that up, it becomes the D, which is not great.
Yeah, this definitely was, again, I just put it, lay it on the script. And then I guess then to the other elements, like you said, they couldn't elevate it. The stars weren't there. The direction definitely wasn't there. I mean, I think it really did remind me of two other movies. I mean, one of them you already mentioned, Tropic Thunder, which is also a behind the scenes of making of a movie, sort of a bit of a more satirical and biting on how Hollywood works. And this movie was sort of trying to say some of those things, but not really. And then the other movie that I thought just was I was thinking of when I, because I walked into this knowing, okay, this is going to be like a movie about stunts, so quote unquote like love letter to the stunt community, and that's where Leech comes from and everything. But I felt that Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof was much more to me like a love letter to stunts, and featuring also a stunt hurt woman. You know, Zoe Bell was a stunt actress, but she was then cast as, you know, the one of the leads in that film. And that made it feel like, okay, you know, Quentin Tarantino appreciates stunt community. Here's a stunt woman who's usually never seen. Now she's actually acting and doing stunts. And the stunts in that movie are just like really awesome. Like her strapped to a car and the car traveling and these
Never
car
seen that
crashes,
movie.
and it looks real, and you can feel that, oh my God, like how is somebody doing this? In the same way that you feel, you know, you mentioned the Mission Impossible films, some of those stunts that Tom does, you're like, whoa. Like you're impressed at him doing that. I never felt that from this movie. I didn't
No.
get that, like, oh my God, Ryan Gosling's doing this thing. This is amazing. Or they made some big deal in the press about a barrel roll that this car does at one point, goes over like 26 times, which is the world record of barrel rolls. I didn't feel it. It was not impressive in that sense, even though I know they were trying to do that. And again, the post-credit sequence showing the behind the scenes, I was like, wow, yeah, they spent a lot of time on this, and this is very interesting. But it just didn't come through in the camera as well as it did in, you know, the Mission films or Death Proof. It failed at that, which I think was the number one thing they were trying to do, which is surprising because that's where Leech comes from. This whole
Yeah.
That's what they were trying to do, but I maybe he's just not a talented enough filmmaker to pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there's too many elements, you know, and they all kind of get lost. Also, casting wise, this is not a generous thing to say, but I think 40-year-olds with filler faces and airbrushed, it just does not bode well, I think, to a movie like this. Like, you know, you need the kind of energy they're going for in this movie. I think get Glenn Powell or somebody else, you know, who's like energy up there. And also the way Gosling is styled, like he's too beautifully styled in the movie, which once again sort of takes you away from, oh, is this like an actual stunt guy doing all this, you know? Like it would be a lot more interesting. Like, what was the movie, the Better Call Saul actor? What's his name? I
Oh,
forget. He did a,
nobody.
yeah.
Yeah,
Like,
the movie
that's a
Nobody.
draw, right? Like, here is somebody you don't expect who doesn't look like your leading man and is doing all this stuff. Like, that's a draw. That's interesting. This is actually not interesting, you know? Like, somebody who's so manicured, put together with perfectly nestled, wavy blonde hair on his face. Like, it just, again, to your point, like, this is not a love letter to the stunt community because I don't know if a stunt person is going to look like that at all times, you know? So, I don't know. Either you make this really frothy and fun, but then you get different stars who match the energy, or you make it gritty, and then you also get somebody else. Yeah, it's a bummer, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think this movie should have been more fun, should have been like
Yeah.
a Tropic Thunder. And maybe I'm saying this just because this is the Emily Blunt episode versus the Ryan Gosling one, but I think you just replace the lead with somebody else. Like take Ryan out of it and put somebody else in there that could, I mean, even like Glenn Powell, like you mentioned, I'm just imagining that working a lot better, and that having that the right charisma just kind of can pave over some of these other issues that they had with the script here. Or even like a, you know, and if this was in the 80s, like a younger Tom Cruise or something could have easily made this movie really fun. But you know, I think she's right in this. It's just the lead and the script are the
Yeah,
issues.
she doesn't have much to do. It's
Right.
not, once again, not her movie.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Emily Blunt and her movies, we're now moving on from the Fall Guy into the section of the episode where we talk about three of our films that really impacted us when it came to this particular filmmaker. So in this sense, Emily Blunt. So we're going over three movies, each of us. So First Love, this is the movie that made the first impact on us personally. Then we're going to talk about A Masterpiece, the movie we think Emily Blunt in this episode, it really does the best job in and really reflects her career. And then Wild Card, just another movie that's important to us in some way. Maybe they took a wild swing and they missed, or maybe this is a hidden gem performance that no one really talks about. So those are the three categories we're about to jump into. Karan, why don't you start off with your first love of Miss Emily Blunt?
All right. So I think this is not a shocker or a surprise. I think a lot of people are going to say this when they think of Emily Blunt, but my first impression, impact, love is all of those things. Is The Devil Wears Prada from 2006, directed by David Frankel, starring Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, Stanley Tucci, great cast. Quick logline: a smart but sensible new graduate lands a job as an assistant to Miranda Priestly, the demanding editor-in-chief of a high fashion magazine. We actually covered this movie in our workplace episode a long time ago.
Yeah, first episode, actually.
First episode. Oh my gosh. What a full circle moment.
I know, yeah.
So if people want to check like a more in-depth conversation, please do that. But, you know, what can I say about this movie that hasn't been said? It's like one of those lightning in a bottle kind of moments, movies, you know, but everything sort of works. Like the script is fun. We have the perfect cast. I think Meryl Streep is always amazing, but I think elevates and becomes capital M-E-R-Y-L because of this movie that she ushers in like a whole other generation of fans and elevates this movie. Anne Hathaway, who people had seen as sort of like, you know, a young teenage star through the Princess Diaries movies and such, like you mentioned, like she bursts on the scene and really it's her movie, you know, in many ways, like it's her arc. She's perfect in the movie. But I think one could make the argument that even though those two are incredible in the movie, Emily Blunt kind of almost steals the movie, because this is an actor that we, at least in the US, had not really seen before. So there's this wow factor to who is this person, number one. And she's just so perfectly between those two other women, right? The wide-eyed person, Anne Hathaway's character, through whose eyes we're watching this whole journey. Meryl's character, who's already made it. And now there's Emily, who's sort of in the middle, you know, who's an insecure person. She probably was Anne Hathaway a long time ago, but somehow her arc in this movie has not really gone, or in this life of hers in the movie has not really gone the way she thought. She's sort of stuck in there. So I think it's a great script, obviously, but it's like brilliant casting, because if you remove Emily Blunt, I don't think the movie works as well as it does. It'll still work, but I think you need that third leg of the stool, if you will. And she obviously has great comedic timing. She brings in the acid that you need in addition to what Meryl is bringing to this movie. She looks incredible. Her chemistry with Anne Hathaway is amazing. That's really required in this movie. So I don't know. You just can't take your eyes off her in this movie. And instantly you're like, I want to see more of this person. Like, I could watch a whole movie on this character's life. And that's what you want in a movie with a supporting part. So yeah, instantly I was like, okay, this is somebody I'm going to watch for the rest of her career. What about you? What was your impression of her, and also thoughts on the movie?
Well, yeah, for me, so sometimes on this show, our choices will overlap. So this also is my first love of Emily Blunt as well. A lot of the same sentiments I'll reflect there, where I do think she, steals the movie in a way. Like, I do remember seeing this movie for the first time back in when it was in theaters, and, you know, liking Anne Hathaway before I went in. And, you know, definitely the movie, you know, as we talked about more on our work episode, was very triggering for me, because I was in a very similar environment. And actually rewatching it for this podcast too, I was starting to have some PTSD and be like, I can still enjoy the movie, but it's like parts of it are a little too realistic and make you feel uncomfortable, and flashbacks to the trauma of what it's like to work as an assistant in an environment like that. But I do remember like leaving the movie and being like, who was this other actress who was playing the other assistant? Not only did she nail what that character is, because I ran into a lot of people like that were the very hard-nosed, jaded, you know, the assistant that is very kind of bitter at the fact that they're not moving up fast enough, but still really wants to play the game and still desires that, you know, that crown, which is like making it out of a desk, which is the goal of every assistant, or not every assistant, but most assistants in that environment. But I thought she just was really funny, playing a good foil to Anne Hathaway. Like, she is a little bit of like, a, I don't want to say like villain, but like an antagonist at certain times against Anne Hathaway's character, but never going like, she's never mean or trying to like sabotage her or anything like that. So you do feel really bad for her in the movie too. You know, when she can't go to the Paris fashion show because she gets sick, you do feel it well sick. And also she's not, you know, performing at the level that Anne Hathaway is. You do feel bad for her and you want her to succeed. You know, Emily Blunt brings that, you feel sympathy for her because of her performance. And it is something like exactly where you nail it too. Like when there's a movie and there's a supporting character that you would like a spinoff from, or you could sit and watch this character do a whole movie, that's really a sign of a great actor or actress being able to pop in a supporting role. And she for sure does in this. I think this movie is great. And even now going back and rewatching it, knowing where she goes in her career, she still just really, yeah, it kind of steals the show in this, honestly, in a lot of scenes and a lot of, that's what I was left with in watching this movie for the first time. Who is this actress that played the assistant? I want to see her in more things.
Yeah, which is amazing. That's a great point, actually. This might be one of her signature traits, that she can be funny, she can be acidic, but there is always a humanity to her. And even if she's playing it for broad jokes or what have you, like Fall Guys, just too broad. Like, people were laughing around me in the theater. I was like, I didn't laugh one bit this entire movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe the joke is on us. I don't know. But but what I was going to say was that even in broad moments, she grounds it. Like, you can see this is a real person, or a real character. So that's amazing that she had that gift so early in her career. Most people don't.
Yeah, and this role is a very hard role to land, in that it very easily can come across as unsympathetic, and you are basically the villain, because it's written where it could... she is...
Or very one-dimensional, right?
One-dimensional, exactly.
You're just like... there to cause trouble, but what is your motivation? Why do you care? And if you do care, then why are you helping her? But it all connects, and a lot of that has to do with her performance.
Right. It wasn't really on the page. Like, it wasn't in the script. You don't know her backstory fully. You don't really know, you know, where... there's a couple lines about, oh, we've trained so many other assistants, we're trying to get someone in here, and you sort of understand her motivation of, oh, I've always wanted to, you know, I'm all so close to getting to go to the Paris week, you know, fashion week, and what she really wants. She's already very fashionable. And, you know, I think she just wants to be part of that world. But you get a sense that it isn't like some, not social climber, sort of like career. Yes, there, you are a careerist. There's something else going on there that is motivating her. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see what that is, but I like how the movie just alludes to it, and her performance sort of fills in some of those gaps. And then as a viewer, you're just thinking a lot about, oh, what is this person? Where does she come from? What does her apartment look like? What is she kind of doing? And that's good world. Now, world building is a bit of a harsh term for a movie like this, or not harsh term, but a extreme term, but it kind of is that you do wonder and what this person's life is like. And it's a lot due to her performance in this movie, which is great. I mean, it's still, is a lot of the energy of this movie, despite Meryl being amazing and Anne Hathaway. This was the movie that made her into like a big, big star as an adult beyond just her, you know, Princess Diary films. I think Emily Blunt stands out too. It's really just the three of them. I mean, Stanley Tucci's also great too, but he does this in his sleep. Not to knock it, but this is just, he just does this effortlessly in movies, the kind of performance in here. But I think Emily Blunt really does steal it, honestly. She does. And I still felt that watching it again for the podcast on a rewatch.
Okay, so should we move on to a masterpiece section? Do you want to go first?
Sure, I can start us off. So my masterpiece is Edge of Tomorrow. This is a film that came out in 2014. The IMDb plot summary: a soldier fighting aliens gets to relive the same day over and over again, the day restarting every time he dies. This is a movie directed by Doug Liman, starring Tom Cruise, Emily Blunt, and Bill Paxton. So this was an interesting movie, especially compared up against what we just talked about, Devil Wears Prada, where Emily Blunt comes out of the gate in, you know, essentially, it's not really a romantic comedy, but it's sort of a light comedy. I'm talking about Devil Wears Prada. So you would expect her to immediately want to sort of get in that lane. Okay, it's going to make a similar movie to Devil Wears Prada, but now Emily Blunt is the lead, or, you know, trying romantic comedies, which she did. She definitely was in some of those films early on in her career. But in this movie, she's playing an action star. And she, you know, the context of this film where, you know, Tom Cruise is the main character, and he is also turns into an action star by the end. But in the beginning, he's basically like a PR agent for the military. So he doesn't actually know how to fight. He's bad with weapons. He doesn't know how anything works. Whereas Emily Blunt from the get-go is supposed to be like this like soldier who's really famous. She's really good. Everyone, you know, looks up to her as like the ultimate, you know, soldier in this battle against the aliens. And she pulls it off. You believe that she is a badass. You believe that she is a soldier. And that's a very difficult thing, especially coming from, you know, her background, which is more like lighter movies or dramas. Doing the action thing, a lot of actors fall on their face in it. And I'm just very impressed. I remember when I saw this the first time, being like, Emily Blunt is in this? This is weird. Like, this isn't going to work. And it really does. I mean, obviously, Tom's amazing. And this movie is also just really very, very well done. And a lot of it is due to Tom. But, you know, maybe we'll do another Tom episode. We definitely will at some point. So I'm going to save a lot of the Tom comments for that. But even the fact that Tom is so great, Emily Blunt doesn't get overshadowed by his star power either, which is something that is very easy to do when you're in a movie like Tom Cruise, which is, you know, a true legend and a movie star. She's not lost in it. They work very well together. And I just was impressed with her being able to, again, act in an action movie and make it believable. And the movie's also just really good. So that's why I had to put this here in, as my masterpiece. So what are your Edge of Tomorrow thoughts? And what did you think when you first saw it?
This is my masterpiece as well. We are really matching today. And I remember going in to watch this movie, not really expecting much. And this was the time of Tom Cruise doing like a bunch of, you know, alien movies, Oblivion and what have you. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like another one of those. It's going to be boring and he's going to save the day. And it turns out it's nothing like that. He's the wimp in the movie for the most part of it.
Right.
And the real hero of the movie is Emily Blunt. And like you said, she's just commands the screen totally from a physicality. There's a sexiness to her. Even though she's playing this action star, she's got it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason for me, why this is a masterpiece performance for her, is because I think it taps into all of her qualities as a performer. I think like you can see the intelligence of this person. You can see the commitment and the rigor physically, as well as just mentally, as to what they've gone through to kind of achieve this success in the movie as the character. You see that.
Mm-hmm.
Great chemistry with her co-star, Tom Cruise, in this case. And there's also a little bit of tongue-in-cheekness. I always associate Emily being a very charming, witty person. Like, she's like one of the best talk show guests across the board.
Right, right.
You know? And so you see when she's like giving Tom Cruise a hard time in the movie, there's a little bit of a cheekiness to her too. And it's a dramatic performance as well. And that's why I think this is a masterpiece, because it sort of hits everything. And, you know, we were talking a little bit, and we'll get to this later in the episode, of like, how does one find the right role to, you know, have Emily sort of really shine? I think this is one of those. Because it taps into all those aspects. And then on top of it, the movie is amazing. The effects really work. You are really in awe of those battle sequences. The aliens really work. The story can get tiring if not done well, but it doesn't. You're on the edge of your seat. Haha, pun intended. So yeah, I know they're making a sequel. So hopefully they do that. And it'll be fun to see those two get together again.
Yeah, no, I think as a movie, this movie too is just very underrated, because it definitely did not perform very well at the box office at the time. I think they just had an issue with how they, you know, marketed and positioned the film. But, you know, I also just love the Groundhog Day conceit of things repeating. I like movies like that, and it's fun to see that translated into an action movie. But they do it in a way where, it, you know, it could get boring, right? You're seeing the same action scene over and over and over again, which they do a lot of that, those repeating, but they do it in interesting ways every time. And Tom Cruise's character is gradually, getting better and better at, you know, being a soldier. And there's a lot of great comedic moments too, where he gets killed in many different ways, which is fun and funny to watch, especially that one scene where he's trying to roll under the car and like the truck runs him over.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Bill Paxton's like, oh my God, he's dead. And there's this like scream that, that Tom Cruise gives off, which is very funny. But to your point of Emily Blunt being a comedian, I think that's why it works really well, because there is this fun, funny-ish tone in the movie at times, and she can really pull that off. And I also just do love at some point in the film, towards the third act, they reach a point where, you know, Tom Cruise even says, oh, I've never repeated this day. Like, this now this is like the day one version of what he's going through. So that's when instantly the movie has stakes again, because it's hard in movies like this where you know Tom's going to die and come back to life. You know they're going to reset. So after a while, if you just keep going with that for too long, there really are no stakes anymore. And it's like, okay, well, what are we really watching now? If he could just always, respawn again because he's dead. And then they reach that point in the third act where he says, okay, this is all new to me. I think it's some line like that, which I think is great. It's like, oh, shit, like now there's stakes again. What's going to happen? How are they actually going to beat the bad guy? Because Tom doesn't know anything anymore. And it turns into basically just a straight ahead action movie at that point. I think that is just really clever in the script, which is, you know, I think the strength of this film and how they adapted. I've not read the original manga for this, but I think the structure of this script is great. And it's just a perfect star vehicle for Tom, especially at this point in his career, and also for Emily Blunt to stretch into the straight ahead, more action, you know, action adventure comedy role. And she does such a good job in this. I had to put this for me as Emily's masterpiece, which you might not think when you see her coming out in Devil Wears Prada in that role, that she could eventually achieve something like this as an actress or be in a movie like this. So I think it's just a testament to her skills and how she's managed her career up to that point. But let's see then our wild card choices if they're going to match or not. So why don't you start with your wild card choice for Emily Blunt? What do you have for us?
Okay, so my wild card is a movie called Looper from 2012, directed by Rian Johnson, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, Emily Blunt. Quick logline: in 2074, when the mob wants to get rid of someone, the target is sent into the past, where a hired gun awaits someone like Joe, who one day learns the mob wants to close the loop by sending back Joe's future self for assassination. That was weirdly written, but hopefully that made sense, sort of.
That sounds like after watching the movie.
Exactly.
You can say that to somebody too. I think that makes sense. Hopefully it does.
So I put this as my wild card because this was the first time I saw Emily Blunt kind of do something like this, which is a little bit more harsh. She has a gun in her hand. She has a Southern accent. It's like a hard kind of role. Because up to this point, like you were saying earlier, she'd been in romantic comedy. She's been in a few dramas, like lighter movies or dramatic movies, but not this sort of a harsh, hard, almost action-y kind of role. And I think you don't have Edge of Tomorrow if you don't have Looper, in my mind. And this was sort of the step towards that. And I just remember watching this movie, which was very entertaining, very cool, very slick when I watched it the first time, but then being totally blown away by Emily Blunt is in this movie. Actually, for me, it was more so in this than Edge of Tomorrow, because this movie came before. So I knew that she could do this, versus here, I never even heard her do an accent, you know? Like, for me, she was very British up to this point. Whether she pulls off the accent or no is a different thing.
I don't think you still heard her do an accent.
I know, exactly. it's very
working.
Choppy.
Yeah, it's
no,
not
it doesn't
good.
Work.
Yeah.
But it's different, though, you know? But her physicality is different. She's very harsh, like I said. Like, she has so much of pain, but not in like a melancholic sort of sad way, but in like a hardened kind of way. And I just not seen that energy from her before, and I think she nails it in this movie. So I just remember being really wowed by that, because it was a total surprise when I watched the movie the first time. But yeah, I'll share my more thoughts as we go. What I'm assuming you watched this movie when it came out.
Yeah, I actually had I'd mentioned before I was went to USC on the podcast, and so did the director Rian Johnson. Actually, was involved in an alumni organization for many years at USC, and we arranged a screening with Ryan to come and talk about the movie and screen it. So that's the first time I saw it with Very Ryan cool. there, which was cool. And I'll get into more of my thoughts on the film in a bit, but in terms of Blunt, it was actually interesting because so this was not my wild card choice. So just there will be one more movie we're talking about. There's no more overlaps. I actually had forgotten she was in this. When you put this in the list, I was like, Looper, Emily Blunt is in this. And then when I rewatched it, I was paying kind of more attention to her in this. And I don't know, she didn't really work for me, oddly, in this movie. I felt that the accent wasn't good, but it's hard to do like those accents. Like, that's not necessarily the reason. It just, she felt like she was trying to, like, the acting came through a little bit in this to me, and she felt a little too young to be playing a part like what the movie needed. And it just, she didn't feel like adult enough, if that makes sense, in her performance. I mean, yeah, she also looks, you know, she has still her baby face, you know, at the mm-hmm. time she, you know, was a little younger, but I don't know, she didn't really work for me in this for what, you know, she needed. And again, we could talk more about the movie in a bit, but yeah, I was surprised that I'd forgotten she was in it. and then secondarily, like, that she just, I don't know, it just wasn't really doing it for me. Like, she felt like this is not really the right property, and whether it's just how she was directed or, I mean, the part is very meaty and interesting and important in terms of what the movie's trying to do. I just think there could have been maybe somebody else in this that would have worked better.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I had not watched this movie since it first came out. And I watched
Me neither, actually.
Recently, yeah. And I was like, I don't think this is really working very well. But as I zoom out and we can now talk about the movie, I don't think the whole movie works either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's a very try-hard movie. It was fresh and cool when it came out. It looked different, like the prosthetics and, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis, that connection and such. It felt interesting and cool, but kind of, I'm sorry to say how I feel about Rian Johnson's movies, where they can feel really cool and fresh, but they don't age very well.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie really feels like a movie of its time. Like, it feels like a movie made in the 90s, actually, even though it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And just rewatching it, like, the plot is just convoluted, overly explained, and the filmmaking feels like, you know, try hard, like I said. And even though I think Bruce Willis is very good in the movie, but yeah, just it doesn't hang together in my mind. And that, to me, then started to feel like, okay, it's actually not so much Emily, it's just the movie overall and how it's just put together. And so I was glad to rewatch it, because in my mind this was a kind of a cool surprise movie. And I think it did pretty well.
It did. Yeah, it did perform well. Yeah.
So it was kind of, I won't want to say it was good, but it was sort of interesting to go back and watch it again. I am happy, though, that it opened another door for Emily.
Yes.
Like I was saying earlier, I don't think she does Edge of Tomorrow and becomes this sort of, you know, well-rounded four-quadrant star, which, you know, she's still on that journey. It hasn't really worked. But this was a pretty important stepping stone in that direction, I think.
No, I definitely agree with you on that, on Emily. And with the film, I remember at the time, I didn't really like it that much. I thought it was okay. And I haven't seen it since then. And it's definitely has a very strong following of people who are like, oh, this is like a classic science fiction movie of the last 20 years. Oh, it's so great. So I was kind of going back in with, you know, okay, I'm going to take another stab at it and see, you know, maybe I missed something or now I will like it better. And it still, to me, just felt, yeah, very like kind of amateur-y. Like, I don't, you know, I love time travel movies. And what I like about them is when they kind of go over whatever their specific mechanics are of how time travel works, that I find interesting. Like, each of these movies, like Back to the Future or Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, they have different takes on what time travel is and how, you know, the past interacts with the future, et cetera. And this movie basically says, we're not going to deal with that. There's a scene where Bruce Willis is there talking to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's his past self. And he sort of yells and he's like, that doesn't matter. Like, what am I going to stand here and draw diagrams for 10 minutes and explain how this all works? And I'm like, yeah, that'd be kind of interesting. Just intellectually, I love to, like, okay, how are you presenting time travel? And they kind of try to be clever about that and say, you know, oh, don't worry about it. It's just kind of enjoy the movie. But if you're showing time travel in here, I kind of want a little bit of that. I think the movie, it's annoying to me personally when they kind of hand wave around that. So that kind of frustrated me. And just the pacing of it and the plot unfurled to me more like a television season where like there's new plot elements that then we deal with that for like 10 minutes and then we move on to something different, something different, something different. And then the movie at the end becomes something very different than it was at the outset, but not in like an interesting way. It just felt more like methodical. Though I will say the ending and sort of the message of, you know, what they're trying to say is a cycle of violence begets violence and people are not born bad. It's their environment. So you have to make sure that, you know, by stop, you know, if you don't be violent to them, then violence will slowly go down. I think that's all great messaging. And I by the very end of the movie, like the last 10 minutes, I'm like, okay, like I can line up with this message. And I like that it's making the statement in this way. It's kind of interesting. So it ended kind of well. So I think it's an okay movie. I'm not going to say it's bad, but when I was watching it, I was sort of like, this isn't very good. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt too, his impersonations of like Bruce Willis it felt like an SNL skit sometimes.
It doesn't work.
Like the eye movements. Yeah. Oh, he's trying to talk like Bruce.
Yeah. It doesn't work. And the makeup feels very false now, but at the time I remember like, oh, this is very interesting, very cool. But yeah, it just doesn't work. And that's interesting about the episodic nature, which I guess is why it feels amateurish and try-hardy, I think. Mm-hmm. And the dialogue is not very good either, the way it's written. So, you know, sometimes people like try something new. I will give Rian Johnson credit for that, right? Like it is an original movie. It has stuff on its mind. It's trying to do interesting things. And that's why it did work when it came out. So, you know, high points in my books for that, but it just doesn't hold up and it's not very good.
Yeah, I think there's the talent. It's clear there's talent there, but it's talent that's still being developed. And I think he is a filmmaker who's, you know, getting better over time, which I like that we're giving him, we isn't like we have any control, the two of us, but I mean, like the industry or society or whatever, the chance to continue to grow his skills into, you know, what he's becoming now, which I do think his last couple films have been good. The Glass Onion and Knives Out movies, I think those were fun. Better.
Although I was thinking about that if I went and rewatched those, how would I feel? And I instantly was like, I have no desire to rewatch those movies. Partly because also they are, you know, mystery movies. So once you've seen them, you sort of have seen them. But even so, like I watched, you know, the classic British mysteries over and over again, because it's not about the plot, it's about the feeling, you know, and
the characters.
I know it's trying to
yeah.
go for the Agatha Christie-like feeling, but I don't know, there is something about in this realm of like, it doesn't age well, or it feels very of its time quality that his movies have, and I think that's still there in my head. I don't know, so...
Well, yeah. I'm glad you put this on the list, because I have been meaning to rewatch this and see if maybe I missed something, and I don't think I did, and I don't know if I'll be coming back to this anytime soon. Though I do sort of feel like this might have been Bruce Willis's last like real performance, and he's very good. He's an actor. Yeah. I just love Bruce Willis a lot, and it's sad to see kind of, you know, what's happening to him health wise. And I think this is the last time he's really present, and he just does an amazing job as Bruce always does. So, but I'm glad you put this on the list. Now I remember Emily Blunt is in it, which I literally forgot before I watched it.
All right. What is your wild card?
So my wild card is a more recent Emily Blunt film. It's Jungle Cruise from 2021. The IMDb plot summary, based on Disneyland's theme park ride, where a small riverboat takes a group of travelers through a jungle filled with dangerous animals and reptiles, but with a supernatural element. Directed by Jamay Collet-Sierre and starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Emily Blunt, and Edgar Ramirez. So I put this movie on my list, not because it's necessarily a good movie, which I don't really think it is, but I really do think actually that this is perfectly captures what I think Emily Blunt works, what she does very, very well. And is, which is also rare, I feel like, in this day and age, and something I want her to kind of continue on, this, which is this more sort of adventure comedy classics, you know, the classic Hollywood sort of slapsticky, comedic, action adventure movies. I think she just really does a good job in this, and it harkens back to a lot of these, you know, 90s movies that I really like The Mummy or Mask of Zorro. It has that type of feel to it, of this like swashbuckler throwback to 1930s and 40s Hollywood adventure movies. And that's a very hard thing to pull off as an actor. And I think she just is does a great job in this. Like, she, you know, you can buy it when she does a little bit of action, but also mixed with comedy, she, you know, makes mistakes a lot. She's a lot of similar like Indiana Jones vibe where like everything she tries doesn't always work, but she'll kind of figure it out anyway. And it's fun watching her fail as much as it is succeed. And I think she really does pop in this movie, especially in the first third, which I hadn't seen this since it originally had come out during the pandemic. So I had watched it on Disney Plus, and just coming back to it now, even more so, I think the first act and really maybe even two acts really do work a lot for me. I think this movie could have been really good, except some fatal flaws that happen later on, which I'll get into when we talk more about the overall film. But I do think Blunt really does carry this even more so than The Rock does. And I'd love to see her kind of taking a mantle from like a Brendan Fraser or like an Antonio Banderas and the things they were doing in the 90s. I think she really could do that. And this movie is a perfect exemplification of that. I don't, what are your Jungle Cruise thoughts? Had you seen this movie before? Had you taken the cruise? I don't mean the actual one at Disneyland, which actually I'm interested to know if you've been on the Jungle Cruise
Oh, I
either.
have. Yeah,
Yeah, it's
yeah,
one of my favorite
yeah.
rides at Disneyland, actually. And I think this movie captures the tone of
Yes.
that ride well too. But yeah,
Yes.
what are your
I
thoughts on the
agree.
film?
I know I've seen this movie because I was like, this sounds dumb, but I watched it for this podcast and I was like very pleasantly surprised by, like, it's not a great movie. It has potential in it, but to your point of like the first two acts are actually really good. And I was very entertained. And I think a lot of that has to do with Emily Blunt. I think you nailed it. And we've been building up to this throughout the episode that there are not that many performers who can do it all. I think she can, actually. You know, she's a dramatic actress, she's a comedic actress, she's physical, she looks great, she's always committed, understands the kind of movie. She's very intelligent, but also very charming and witty. And those are the qualities you need in in a character in a movie like this that you're talking about, you know, the 90s sort of adventure movies. But also she kind of reminds me of Claudette Colbert kind of performers as well, like from way back when, of the 40s movies, of like somebody who's charming and smart but also kind of slapsticky and funny. And you said it very well. You enjoy watching them fail and succeed, and that's all there in this movie. But this movie, once again, the movie starts as her being the lead, and then at some point that's no longer the case. And I was like, why is this happening again? Why are we once again? I mean, we know why,
It's The
but
Rock,
in
yeah.
her, yeah, exactly, in her career, like this keeps happening, I think, that where she sort of starts off great but then ends up becoming the supporting part in the movie. And she's barely there in the third act.
Right, and that's I think the problem I have with this movie is when it turns into more of a supernatural kind of Pirates of the Caribbean
Exactly.
ripoff out of nowhere, unnecessary. We don't need all the
Totally.
these CGI ancient
Oh.
Spanish guys, like they're it's B-Men
Snakes and
now or
things
something.
and yeah.
It just I immediately sort of get bored with it. And I think also, that's when Emily kind of disappears from the film a little bit, to your point, and it becomes more of just this rock, vehicle. And I don't think he really works that well in this movie per se. Like he's a huge man. And
Yeah.
I just the physical comedy and the slapstick with him can work in certain circumstances. I've loved The Rock since the 90s when he was a wrestler, but I don't think he works in this. And while they have decent chemistry together, I feel like other actor, maybe like a Hugh Jackman or Antonio Banderas or something would have been much more suited for this and not taken over the movie so much towards the end. I think he kind of pulls the movie down, honestly.
Yeah, I
He's a
agree.
rock that pulls. This rock is sinking the ship. A little bit in this, though. Like I said too, there's story problems with it as well. But I think she does a great job. And as we're talking about this too, and you mentioned these other older, actresses, older not like age wise, but in terms of in time period, it also made me think too that I think Emily Blunt can work in this type of movie, but set in the past. And it's hard sometimes with actors where you feel like they would never have existed in like the 20s. Like just looking at them, you're like, okay, they can't, like a Sandra Bullock, who I love. You put her in this movie, and it's like, okay, I don't believe that she existed, back in the 20s. It's just, I don't. Whereas Emily Blunt, she can work in these
In
situations. And you're
all
okay,
time
yeah.
periods,
She can,
really.
she's all time period. She could work in every time period. And I think that's important for this type of movie too, that is more of a, throwback to this time. They kind of have to be period pieces. like a Pirates or a Mask of Zorro, even
right.
Indiana Jones. Like they're all set in the past because that type of swashbuckly adventure, action comedy, it's harder to do that in present day, just with the technology and the weapons and more of a sense of danger that doesn't make it as funny. So I think that's another reason why she works so well in this movie, because she can take her persona and into the past. But and rewatching it, actually, I liked it better, like I said, than I remembered. Mm-hmm. And I really just wish they had had a different script and maybe a different lead actor to play against Emily Blunt. And I hope that, I think this movie did okay. I mean, it was during the pandemic.
Yeah, it did pretty
so,
well.
I'm not sure box office wise, but I, you know, we'll get into this now. Actually, let's transition into, you know, what we would like to see her do in the future. And, you know, I'll just, I guess, start because it's a transition into it. I think she should be doing more films like this, like action and adventure comedy movies, where she can lean on her skills as a comedian, because she's also very funny. And we've seen in, you know, Edge of Tomorrow, she can definitely play an action star and be very believable. But blending those two things together in, you know, a Pirates of the Caribbean, Mask of Zorro, all these movies I keep mentioning, I think she could do a great job of maybe being the lead in them, like a female Indiana Jones type, you know, character or that type of thing, where the movie is rests on her. And I think she could pull off. She really, when in Jungle Cruise, when she was a lead, I thought it was great. It was really working.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what I'd like to see her try next in her career, like continue on something like this. I mean, maybe there's Jungle Cruise 2 where they sort of don't bring The Rock back and it's just her moving
I'm
around.
sure
I don't
they
know.
bring The Rock back in that movie.
I don't know. Some things are, he's not
true.
Doing well in the press recently, but
right.
what would you like Emily Blunt to do next? What would you like to see her do?
Yeah, that's a good one that you said. Instead of Jungle Cruise, like maybe somebody will be bold enough to write like a new Indiana Jones like character, you know, like fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And I should have said this when we were talking about Jungle Cruise. I kept thinking about The Mummy because there's obvious comparisons there. And I was like, why does this movie not get to the level of The Mummy?
The
And
Brendan Fraser Mummy, yeah.
Yeah, and you sort of had some points. I totally agree with those. The other big one is these movies need to have like sense of place and adventure.
Mm.
And you get that when you go to a real place. I always say this. In that movie, it's shot in the Middle East. You feel that. You feel the sand. You're in there. The sense of like wow and adventure. This movie, Jungle Cruise, looks totally fake wherever, because it is fake. It's shot and it's all CGI pretty much, and you see that.
Yeah,
And
I will say though, there is that one set that is that big outdoor like harbor set, like where Paul Giamatti is and things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that to me, that I that was like,
yeah.
Okay, wow, they built a set. But once they go on the cruise on the river, yes, you're right. It's like they're clearly in a green screen, and that does lessen the impact of the movie for sure.
Yeah.
I wish
And
they had more sets.
I agree. And that's my worry with kind of this kind of movie, is that in today's age, they're just going to make it all CGI and it's just going to look bad. But I do love that for her. I think my thing would be make her work with an A-plus director and cast her as a lead. And maybe it's a contemporary movie that's like, you know, a hard ass character who has, you know, comedic timing and sort of a squash buckling, like you said, tone to it, but it's set in modern times. I'm trying to think what director would be great. Like, I don't know. She should work with Fincher, I think, or maybe Adam McKay, you know, cast her in like a really whip smart character that's a little bit darker, but has like a sarcastic kind of dark comedy tone to it. I think we've not really seen her do that, but I know she can do it, and make her the lead. No ensemble pieces, no other big star, or if there's a big star, let her go toe to toe with them. I mean, she needs to do that, I think. And
yeah, I like
do not be in your husband's movies again.
Oh, I like the Adam McKay idea. I think because I think she could do a very good job in a world that with his dialogue, his like very strong and biting satire, she could exist really well in that. And maybe if he goes back to making more blockbuster films and instead of his more like pointed, you know, message movies, which I do also really like. But if he went back to that more, you know, like Other Guys or Anchorman or those types of things, I think she would do really well in movies like that.
But yeah, my overall thing is she's amazing, always good. Hollywood, what are you doing? Cast her in a good movie. Give her the lead role. That's my pledge, my pitch.
Cool. So, what do we have coming up next, Karan? What's our next episode? What's our next movie? Why don't you tease our listeners?
Okay, so our next movie is Furiosa, and because of that, we're going to be talking about Chris Hemsworth. So, very excited about that. Looks like the early buzz is positive, which
yeah,
good.
Yes, very excited about that movie and to dive more into the Hemsworth. So we hope you enjoyed the episode today. Be sure to let us know in the comments what your thoughts on Emily Blunt are, maybe some of your favorite movies of hers or what you thought of our picks. We're also available here on YouTube, on all podcast platforms as well. So don't forget to subscribe on either your podcast platform of choice or YouTube if you haven't already done so. And make sure to rate and review us and like the video because that really helps new listeners find the episode. So with that, Karan, we'll see you at Furiosa.
You don't even like carbs.